CEO may push the CFO to an area where they're not comfortable with, you've got to push back. And it's that's part of your duty. You've got to make sure that you're compliant and that you're not allowing the business to go down a path that it shouldn't.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. If you are a CEO of an SMB company, you might think that getting to $25 million in revenue is the hardest. However, if you ask anyone who has experience with an IPO or with a public company's reporting, the game completely changes when you go public. As a public company, you will have increased reporting needs and additional stakeholders such as board and shareholders. If this is your first time leading a public company, you will need to game up your leadership and persuasion skills. In today's episode, we have our guest, Brian Goffenberg from Vital Hub, who discusses the difference between accounting for a public and private company. He also touches on the importance of auditing and why most companies must consider getting audited by a public accounting firm despite its price tag. Finally, he shares his experience on the relationship between CFO and CEO and what new controllers and accountants need to know about this relationship. Let me introduce Brian to you. Brian Goffenberg, CPA, CA, has expertise in the financial management of information technology firms, including MedWorks Solutions Incorporation, Philips Lifeline, GWL Incorporated, and Dellarina Incorporation, both before and after its 1995 sale to Symantec Corporation. He has served as a financial partner and business advocate within a varied scope of organizations and has served in leadership roles throughout trajectories of up to triple revenue growth. In addition to certification from the Canadian Institute of Chartered Accountants, Brian holds a bachelor's degree in commerce and accounting from the University of the Witwatersrand, Johannesburg, South Africa. With that, let's get to the conversation.
Hey, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay, to start off, Brian, you know, I would like to learn a little bit about you. Do you want to share your personal story and what you are focusing these days?
Sure. I'm a chartered accountant. I currently work for a software company called Vital Hub Corp. It's a healthcare IT company which trades on the Toronto Venture Exchange. It was a company which my boss, the CEO of the company, Dan Mettler, and myself purchased and then took it public via RTO. I immigrated to Canada in the end of 1986 from South Africa, where I qualified as a CA, did my articles with Arthur Anderson. I was brought to Canada by a company called Zipra Sibling, which is part of ENY. Worked for them for a number of years and then have spent a number of years in industry working for private and public companies, ranging from healthcare IT to technology and including advertising. So I had a wealth of experience in a number of different companies. I like to consider myself more as an operational CFO and a great second support person for any organization. So, you know, my role, I deem as a CFO is to really make sure that I'm supporting the CEO and giving him or her all the support that they need to be successful.
Okay, so one of the questions that I always ask, and obviously I'm going to be digging deeper into some of the things that you mentioned during your intro, but before that, one of the questions that everybody needs to answer, whoever comes on this show, and that is their perspective on growth. So tell me, what is your position on growth?
I think, you know, any organization wants to grow. You have to challenge your organization, set goals, and make sure that you're growing. But I do believe in managed growth. By managed growth, I mean that you've got to be able to grow the organization in a responsible fashion. So if you're running a business and you want to have a business that's successful, you have to be profitable at some time. So yeah, I see a lot of businesses going out and trying to create a lot of noise and come up with try and drive revenue, but have no path to profitability. And I just don't think that that's sustainable. Unless you're obviously a dot-com business or you're a business that's looking just for eyeballs, you've got funded, you have tons of funding and you're able to take that money and just try and get subscribers and use that to, and your exit is to just exit with by selling your subscriber base. But otherwise, I think if you're gonna grow a business, you've got to have a path to profitability, and it should be pretty pretty close. You don't want to have that that path and that gate too far. So yeah, I think it's very important to make sure, you know, obviously you're going to plan for funding and make sure that you get the right funding to allow you to achieve that goal. And any time that you do any planning, you have to plan for some contingencies which are going to arise along the way.
Okay, so I want to go back to one of the comments that you made during your intro for CFO being the support person for the CEO. This is very important. I definitely agree with you there. In fact, I have personally written an article and I'm going to include the link of that article as part of the show notes. So the article talks about overall the skills that CFO needs to have in talking to CEOs. And sometimes the CEO may have the finance background, sometimes they might not. Sometimes they may understand the nuances of the finance and accounting, and sometimes they might not appreciate. So what would be your perspective? Let's say if I have a new CFO who is starting in their career and they want to learn how to work with a CEO, what would be your perspective on that?
I think you've got to understand, I think being the CFO, you've got to have, obviously, you've got the technical skills. So you've gone through a super amount of training and you've got some really good technical skills, probably way more advanced than your CEO has. Your CEO typically has a lot of other skill sets which you don't have, and you've got to recognize that you don't have them, and you've got to be able to make sure that the CEO has the information, because information and knowledge is power. To give them that, the information and support to grow the business, and it's got to be timely, and it's got to be smart, and it's got to be good information. So your role, you've got to understand, yeah, you may be technically smarter, or you may have a better training than your CEO, but your CEO is there for a reason and has accomplished the role for a lot of good, probably you've got a lot of good reasons. Now, you have to also be in line with your CEO. When I say in line, you have to make sure that you believe in what the CEO does. If you don't believe in what the CEO is trying to achieve, and some CEOs will push you and will push the envelope in any business, they're typically pretty positive. And when I say positive, they'll push the envelope and they keep people, they keep wanting to move the business forward. And, you know, you may stumble and, you know, hit a roadblock. They'll typically work out how to get around that roadblock. You may come up with some solutions and some technical ideas and see where things aren't always going well. But they would typically look at, you know, the grass is always greener to them and they can always push forward. So you've got to make sure that one, there's a, that you're comfortable with the CEO, and that they have the right level of integrity. Don't ever cross the line. If there's ever, you may be pushed along the way, and I've seen it in numerous organizations where the CEO may push the CFO to an area where they're not comfortable with. You've got to push back, and it's that's part of your duty. You've got to make sure that you're compliant and that you're not allowing the business to go down a path that it shouldn't. So it's very important, I think, to be in step with the CEO, argue, debate. It is healthy, and it helps move things forward. And but understand your role and know that you can always disagree and beg to disagree, but continue and work forward to help the organization.
So I want to go back to some of the scenarios of public versus private company. In case of private company, you are only working with the CEO. But obviously, as you mentioned, CEO has a tough job. They need to talk to the shareholders. And I don't know how much CFO is involved, and maybe you can talk about that as well. But I mean, you, as a public company, you are trying to convince a lot more people than just a CEO. So how does the job change when you are a public company versus the private company?
I think the stakeholders are still the same. You've got the CEO, you've got the shareholders. So depending on you know, with a private company, you know, it might be closely held. You might have a VC that's backing you, or other people that are backing you. If it's just you're working for a CEO who owns the company, it's a very different dynamic. Or you know, sometimes you could work for a family-owned company, and there's another dynamic where you've got to deal with the family. And some families are functional, some are dysfunctional, and you've got some challenges. You may have some challenges there. But if you're working for a private company that has taken in some outside money, whether it's VC, whether it's bank financing, you're responsible to those other shareholders, and you've got to make sure that you're providing them with honest and the right information. So how it differs when you get to a public company, now that all that information is out there, it's in the public domain. You're publishing quarterly financials. Your business is being monitored and being judged on a quarterly basis. So you really have to be aware of what you're putting out, the information that you're putting out. And when I say aware, you got to understand that everyone has that information. You also have to be aware with a public company that you can't give more information to some people than others. So, unless someone signed an NDA, they can't get certain information. But people are trading on the information that they receive. So you have a responsibility to all the shareholders who are out there who are getting information from you. And the amount of information that you can part and people are comfortable with you giving up depends on the relationship I think you have with the board and the CEO. And if they're comfortable with what you're telling the street, that's fine. Then you'll be able to give out more information and have more conversations with people in the street. If they're not, and you're not involved operationally, and you're not involved with the business as much, then people will want you to have less communication with the street. With a private company, it's also pretty much controlled. You'll be talking to the board, and you'll be talking to individual shareholders, but probably the CEO would probably control most of that.
Okay, so I want to go back to one of your comments that you made about the pushback, and it's interesting the way you talk about pushback. And that actually reminds me some of the exams that I have written as part of my CFA journey. And I remember those ethics questions. They used to be very difficult, extremely, extremely difficult. My head used to spin reading those questions. So obviously your info and reports is great. But it depends upon the person who is interpreting them. So sometimes it could be challenging to persuade, to communicate. So when it comes to pushback, what are some of the things that newer CFOs can learn in terms of skills so that they are able to persuade and they are not crossing the line? I think you mentioned that term as well, right? And in terms of ethics, you need to be super careful, especially if you're running a public company. Oh my goodness, I mean, that's a tough job. So you need to be ethical, but at the same time, you also need to please your board and CEO. So how do you do that, Brian?
I think you have to set a line and draw a line in the sand where you say, fine, I can push the business. You can push me so far, but I'm not going to break. And where am I not going to break? I'm not going to step over the line. I'm not going to do anything that I don't believe is right and that's unethical, that's going to compromise my integrity. Because as soon as you compromise yourself once, you're done. You just can't do it. So you have to set that line. And part of it is communication. It's really going in, you know, if you feel someone is pushing too hard in an area that you're not comfortable with, you've got to talk about it. And you'll talk to the individual. I always say to my staff typically is, if I'm doing anything that you see that I'm doing something that's not appropriate, come and speak to me. And if I'm not giving you, if I don't come up with the correct solution, or you think that you're still not comfortable with what I'm doing or how I've changed or anything like that, then you go to my boss and you tell him. And that's a check and balance that I have. And I believe all people should have that same type of check and balance, but they should have that internally. So fine to say, if I'm going down a path that I don't feel comfortable with, I have to bring it up. And the first person to bring it up is go speak to your boss or the person who's pushing you down that line. And if they're not explaining your situation, if they don't see it the way you see it, and you're still uncomfortable with the way it's being dealt with, you know, they may see it and say, oh yeah, I understand. And let's do something else. Or if they don't, and they're still going down a path which you're not comfortable with, then get hold of someone on the board and you've got to find someone that you feel comfortable with and discuss it with them. And they may say, well, yes, they might either agree with you or disagree with you, but they'll come up with they should be able to help you with the solution. If they can't, then you've got a bigger issue because, you may be down a path that you're not comfortable with completely, and then you may have to leave the organization.
Okay, and related to this, the ethics questions are not really as black and white. They are very gray, and that's what makes them extremely difficult. And the risk is paramount because you have a risk of getting fired because end of the day, you are actually reporting to the board and the CEO. So obviously, you have a lot at stake. So it requires a lot of courage, in my opinion, to be able to bring these topics and talk about them. And sometimes that could be emotional as well. So what would be your perspective in terms of dealing with the situation? I know you have touched on this a bit. I would like to get deeper perspective.
Listen, you have to be comfortable speaking to your CEO. I mean, you're working with this person. You should be working pretty closely. And as I say, you should be that person's right-hand man or woman. And to do that, you've got to gain their confidence and their trust. And if you've got that, then they'll speak to you and they'll be able to discuss items. If you don't have that trust, then you've got a bigger issue because then you've got to ask yourself, is this something that I really want to do or I want to be part of? Because both parties, both the CEO and the CFO, have to understand their roles and have to understand how integral they are to each other. If you don't, if your CEO doesn't feel that your role is that important to him or her, then you're probably not doing as good a job as you should be doing. And you need to try and bridge that gap and try and understand what it is that person needs and the support that they need for you to be successful. And you'll find that out pretty soon and you'll see you'll be able to see if you're successful. If they're coming to you for information and coming to discuss things with you, if they're just ignoring you and they're leaving you in the back, you know, the typical bean counter type thing, you know, just give me the numbers and I'll be happy. Your role you may not be in the right place.
Okay. So on that point, I would like to touch a couple of more things related to CFO and CEO's relationship. So let's say if you were to name some CEOs that were your absolute favorite, okay? You can name them. If you don't want to name them, that's okay as well. What I'm really looking for is the three to five qualities that you appreciated in them, the best CEOs. And not so good CEOs, and they may have some qualities that you didn't appreciate as much. So maybe you can talk about that. And then I want to do the same thing with CFOs as well. So I'm pretty sure you have some peers, 3 to 5 qualities that you appreciated about the CFO and 3 or 5 qualities that you don't appreciate in some CFOs.
I'm going to start with CFO first. When I joined a company called Delrina, which was a public company way back, which got bought out by a company called Symantec, which is has all the antivirus software. I worked for a CFO named Mike Cooperman. He was a phenomenal mentor. He pushed us, challenged us, and allowed us to sort of thrive in an environment where we were running, we were trying to grow a business, and it was a pretty successful business. I think it's probably one of the bigger exits in Canadian software history. I think it sold for about $461 million, I think, to Symantec. But Mike would push you, would allow you to make mistakes, and would allow you to push the envelope. When I say push the envelope, he made sure that you learned along the way, that you continually try to improve the business, and just would give you advice along the way. As far as CEOs, I worked for a great CEO called Len Wexler when I was at Lifeline, which ultimately got bought by Philips Lifeline. So Lifeline's a personal emergency response systems for the elderly. Len, once again, would challenge you. He was pretty direct. So that was one thing that you had to get used to. So if there was a problem or something, he would tell you, and he wouldn't mince words, and would really hold you accountable to whatever you did, push you to do your best, push you for continuous improvement. And we had probably one of the most rigorous planning processes that I've been involved with Lifeline. And because we did that, we spent a ton of time and effort in the planning process. We typically knew that we would at least meet and exceed our results on a regular basis. And I say, Len was just one of those people that challenged you, that put it out there. And you could always debate with him and was always open. At the end of the day, you knew that he was in charge. But And you better prepare properly when you come to a meeting and you come to speak to him, because you didn't want to waste the individual's time. So I think those qualities and those things that you've got to be prepared to be pushed, and you've got to be prepared to be challenged. I think it can just be an environment that you thrive in. If it's, some people don't like the operational side of a business, and then don't get involved in it. Stay and do areas, concentrate in areas that you're comfortable with, whether it's just, strict accounting, technical accounting. I know I went through a ton of training on the technical side or the accounting side. It's not my strength, and it's not an area that I enjoy. I enjoy the operational side of the business, and so I focus more on that and try and make sure that I'm as effective as possible as a operational CFO.
Okay. So when I look at the analysis, I typically like to make it comprehensive. So obviously you spoke about the qualities that you admire in a CEO and CFO, but we did not get a chance to discuss the qualities that you don't admire. And that is equally important as well, because that is actually going to provide us a lot of learning. So again, you don't have to name anyone here, but I would like to talk about some qualities that you didn't appreciate either in a CEO or CFO.
On the CEO side, I've worked with people who, when I say push the envelope, and I think if it went over the line, and I won't, I wouldn't want to, I don't want to work with those type of people. I just think people who don't respect the position, the CFO position, or respect what you have to offer, I don't want to work for. The challenge that people get to when they're young and when they first start out in industry, you work for someone and you sit there and there's no real, what I call it, whistleblower protection. You know, they talk about it in public companies and that. But as an individual, you're sitting there, and if your CEO does something that you think is offline and you try and approach him and you try and get it dealt with and it's not getting dealt with satisfactorily, you only have one real solution, and that's to quit and then find another job. If you don't have resources to quit and thing, then you end up staying around and biding your time until you find the right opportunity, but you're working in a pretty tough environment. So I think what you've got to do up front is, in the interview process, understand who you're dealing with as best as possible and spend a ton of time and energy researching the individuals to make sure that they do have the integrity and that they do have maybe the same type of goals and aims that you have. I've worked for a number of people that I would never work for again, just because I think either they stepped out of line or they just weren't as, I'd say, honest as they could have been. And you don't have to tolerate that. You've got to make sure and ask yourself. I mean, I remember working for one company, and one of the senior people in the company came to me one day and he said, well, how he evaluates whether the company is the right company for him. He asked himself one question, and it is, and you'd only appreciate this if you have a family. He asked the question is, would I let my children work here? And if you think about that, it's a pretty interesting question, because most of us will tolerate a lot more than we let our kids tolerate. And I remember he asked the question to himself and ended up leaving within a month. I asked the question to myself. I had the same answer as him. But at the time, I didn't have any financial resources to leave. So I stuck around a little bit longer than I probably should have. But I think it's a very interesting question. It's one that you can appreciate if you do have a family.
Okay. So let's talk about the journey of an accountant. Obviously, when anyone starts in their finance or accounting career, they are going to be starting with a position that is probably not going to be as accountable. And when I look at the accountability, I am looking at, let's say, the signature on a legal paper where you are going to have legal obligations personally. And I keep hearing these news, and I don't know, to be honest. I mean, in terms of overall journey, how much CFO is accountable, and let's say if something happens to the company or with respect to reporting, the consequences could be including, getting some jail time, right? Which is extremely, sad and severe that nobody wants to see. So in terms of the accountability, when does that accountability start? Does it start at the controller role? Does it start at the CFO role? Or they are never going to be touched, and the responsibility is really on CEO and shareholder to make sure that the reporting is accurate and CFO is not going to be legally accountable for anything?
Well, I think the day that you take on, that you decide you want to be a CFO or whatever, you take on that role and you take on that accountability. And that's one thing that I think you have to understand. And, as you said, you talked about ethics and that today. Part of your training is that you take on that role. So you cannot allow yourself or to stray and to do anything that's unethical, that's illegal. It's just, people rely on you. The reason why you've called the CFO, the controller, anyone to do the finance is because there's a huge responsibility. You've got, you're controlling the cash. You're typically dealing with banks. You're dealing with recording of what the corporations, any of the corporations' movement and operations. So it starts from day one. It doesn't. You don't suddenly wake up and have that role. It's there, and it's you have to make sure that you don't step over the line. And our training typically allows you to do that. The challenge is most organizations, as soon as you've qualified, you've got the wealth of knowledge, and you want to use that. I encourage all people getting into business when you're starting out in any role to be patient when you start, because typically you will have probably more knowledge and your skill set at the time, because you're a newly qualified grad, will probably be more technically, your technical competence will be probably more than most of the people that you're working for. But just remember, they have a lot of experience. They've been down this path, and you can learn a lot from them. So I think be patient, learn as much as you can, absorb as much as you can, but speak up when you see that you can add value.
Okay. So one of the questions that I really wanted to cover as part of this interview is your auditing experience, Brian. You have been auditor for a long time. And in my customer base, when I look at anything below $25 million manufacturing and distribution companies, they are not necessarily getting audited. So tell us, what is the importance of auditing and why everyone should consider auditing? If you think that, everyone should consider auditing.
So auditing is interesting. I mean, I found that, I always used to say to people, auditing was a way for public accounting firms to try and convert you from being an entrepreneur to being a technical auditor, because you have to do this 3 years. And in my day, it was sort of 3 years or something of articles with an accounting firm. So you go in there, you probably did your CA because you wanted to become an entrepreneur. You saw a lot of CAs became CEOs, so that was kind of the path you wanted to travel. But then you get to have to do this 3 years of articles. I think, when I look back at what I did and how I learned during that time, I think what you really want to do during that time period is, it's a great opportunity to learn and see how different businesses run. Should companies have audits? Yes, they should. I think it just gives them a good opportunity to see what controls. The challenge with an audit that I have found was just, it's so historical. By the time you finish auditing, the company could be under, they've moved on. And you're really just providing, if the company is run well, you're confirming what they're doing. If it's not run well and the issues, you're coming up with issues which probably operationally aren't good anyway, and the business itself may or may not be in have its own problems. But I think from an auditing perspective, it's a great opportunity to learn, to see. You may decide that it's a career that you like. It's not being a partner in a CPA firm is a pretty decent career, and you can do pretty well out of it. Just be patient and learn is probably the biggest bit of advice. The other thing that I learned once along my career, I had one partner who was really great. I was doing an audit, and Arthur Andersen in those days, while it was around, was a pretty a fair amount of competition among people and what have you. So you found that a lot of the work that you did, you'd kind of rush, when I say rush through it, you try and do it as fast as possible to make sure that you're meeting deadlines and et cetera. I was on a job, and one of the partners turned around to me and said, "Well, what do you know about the inventory?" And I looked at him, I showed him my working papers, which were fantastic, well laid out, et cetera. He said to me, "Whoa, do yourself a favor. When you go to accounting, spend a day or two with a CEO and CFO. Just walk around with them, talk to them, and then understand the business, and then start auditing." And that made so much sense when I looked at it, because suddenly now I started learning a bit about businesses, learned a bit more about the business instead of just working in spreadsheets and not understanding the businesses. So I think one of the big things taken out of that is, if you've got an opportunity while you're auditing to understand and try and learn about businesses, to speak to some pretty smart individuals, CEOs, CFOs of different organizations, use it and get as much as you can out of it. Another thing too that you've got to realize is when you come out of that, once you've done that, depending on how much time you spent with on the operational side, and most auditors don't spend much time, and I find that most auditors come out don't really understand the business side of things. So, they have very technical on the accounting side, but on the business side, really don't understand much. And I maintain on the business side, if you really want to understand a business, you have to be working in an organization where you can't, when you have a challenge to make payroll, because then you start understanding cash flow and you understand what really drives a business is cash. And cash, you've always heard the term cash is king. It is. So understand what it is to work in an organization where you don't have cash and you're scratching and clawing to get money, whether it's from customers, from the bank, to meet payroll. And then you have a much better understanding of what it is to be in business.
Okay, amazing. So that's it for today. Brian, do you have any last minute closing thoughts?
I think if you're going down this journey, I think it's a great journey to go down. Be honest with yourself. Define what type of role you want to be in and be honest with what you're capable of doing. You know, a lot of people will sit there and say, yeah, I want to be a CEO or I want to be an operational CFO, but they're not prepared to understand or learn the business side of things and are not comfortable on the business side of things. They're not comfortable dealing with people. Make sure that you're comfortable with whatever role you want to take on. Be patient and just work to the best of your ability, and I'm sure you'll be successful.
That's amazing, Brian. This is super powerful insight, and I'm sure this is going to be very helpful for your peers and the people who are starting in their journey. So I thank you so much for your time and insight.
Thank you very much. And as I say, if anyone wants to reach out to me for anything, I'm quite happy to help mentor individuals. I'm happy to help companies who are starting out, who have going down different processes, can reach out to me, and I'd love to help, and I'd love to impart some of the knowledge and that I have gained over the years.
Okay, and we are going to be including your contact information, Brian, and the links that you are going to send out in the show notes so they can check there as well and they can connect with you.
Thank you.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to know further about Brian, please visit vitalhub.com. It's VitalHub.com. He's active on LinkedIn and available for any board or advisory work, and would be happy to mentor individuals.
He also encourages everyone to follow his current CEO, Dan Matlow, and VitalHub on LinkedIn, as he is one of the best CEOs he has ever worked with and proud of the culture that he has created at VitalHub. VitalHub is proud of open culture, where you don't have to be afraid to challenge anyone.
Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Randy Johnston from K2 Enterprises, who touches on why process documentation is an essential ingredient for an efficient finance organization. Also, the interview with Wayne Seddon, who brings a unique perspective on why business processes are more important for growth than individual business systems. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.